We're working through a Sunday night series on 1 Peter called Standing Firm. And Peter is in a section on suffering. And I really struggled with the title of this message because prepare to suffer. I thought if I saw that in the bulletin, I might not even want to come. You know, like who prepare to suffer? Great, Greg, that's really going to be a blessing. And yet that's what Peter's talking about. Because as we've talked about in previous messages, I think most of us, we struggle with this idea that I'm a Christian, so Lord, give me a great life. I want to have a better life than other people, and I don't want to suffer because I'm a Christian. And if I am suffering, something must be wrong. Maybe I failed God. Worse yet, maybe God failed me. And so here I am, I'm reading my Bible, I'm praying, I'm maybe giving financially, I'm attending church, and life's not going the way I want it. It hurts, I'm suffering, what's wrong? And Peter's helping us to understand that it may well be that there's nothing wrong, but that Christians should expect to suffer. And that's what he says. Here we are in 1 Peter chapter 4, I read verse 1. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lust of men, but for the will of God. And then we'll also cover verse 3, Lord willing, in just a little bit. The title of the message, Prepare to Suffer. You say, what does Peter want us to understand? That suffering's not a mistake. That you could be living for Christ, you could be living a godly life, and doing everything the Lord wants you to do. And he has a will for you. And that will include suffering. And he's going to do good through that suffering. That's all in that first word here in 1 Peter chapter 4 in verse 1. Do you see it there? The word therefore. It's going back to what we talked about previously in 1 Peter chapter 3. Look at verse 18, please. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18. For Christ also died for sins, he suffered and died, once for all, the just for the unjust, so that he might bring us to God, having been put to death in the flesh but made alive in the spirit. We could not have been brought to God. We could not be forgiven. We could not be saved. We could not be God's children. We could not be born again if Christ had not suffered. It's in light of what Jesus Christ suffered. And now I read verse 22, last verse in chapter 3, who is now at the right hand of God, having gone into heaven after angels and authorities and powers had been subjected to him. Christ suffered to bring us to God, and when his suffering was over, he was exalted to the right hand of God. There is suffering on the path to glory. And if your faith is in Jesus Christ, you're on that same path, and one day you will be glorified. And one day you'll be with Christ forever, and life will be wonderful, no changes. But until that time, what do we have to do? Well, chapter 4, verse 1 says, therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose. Just 2 points tonight. Point number one. Actually, a four-point message. We'll do 2 tonight, and Lord willing, 2 next week. The first thing we need to do is we need to prepare to suffer because Christ suffered. Do you see the imperative, the command in verse 1? Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, here it comes, arm yourselves also. So what Peter is telling us is we need to arm ourselves. It's a military word. We need to equip ourselves. That's the imperative. That's the main item that we want to focus on. Peter is saying you need to get right ready for battle because suffering is coming. And battle is a picture of the Christian life. Again, there are people who would say, put your faith in Jesus Christ and everything will go your way. We know that's not the case. We know it's a battle many places. I'll just read Ephesians 6:11, affirm this very truth that the Christian life is a battle. Put on the full armor of God, Ephesians 6:11, so that you'll be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. Ephesians 6:13, take up the full armor of God so that you will be able to resist in the evil day and having done everything to stand firm. There is a battle, and what do we need to do? It's right in verse 1. We need to arm ourselves. We need to put on the armor, or we need to get our weapons ready. It's the idea that you would never go into battle unprepared. I have a student who's a little bit older than a lot of my other students. He has been, I believe, on 4 tours with the United States Army. He's a mechanic, and he explained to me that he not only works on trucks and vehicles, he also works on weapons. And I asked him, well, what do you do? And one of his assignments was he was in charge of the weapon room. And he said it's a very large room that he said is like a safe. He said it's like Fort Knox in miniature. You can't get in it anyway but one door, and the door is narrow, and there's all kinds of locks and security on it. And I said, well, what goes in there? He says, all of the soldiers' arms. That when you come back on base, this is what he was saying, I'm sure it's different in different bases, you take that M1, or if you're an officer, whatever, your sidearm, I don't know what they're using now, I guess they're using 9mm, and you don't keep that with you wherever you go. You check it in, and then when there's an assignment, and you're supposed to go and investigate somewhere, you are given a weapon, and you check the weapon out, and you check it back in. And that way, the United States Army keeps track of the weapons. This is the idea that Peter's talking about. In the Christian life, there's going to be suffering, there's going to be persecution, and you need to arm yourselves for that. You would never just go out into battle without being armed. So the command here, Peter says, is arm yourself. But he's not talking about weapons, and you can see that in verse 1. Arm yourselves also with the same purpose. Now, the word purpose can be translated attitude or intention. It's obviously not a weapon in the sense of a gun or a sword or something we'd hold in our hand. It's a way of viewing life. It's a way of thinking. That word in verse 1 that's translated in the NASB, purpose, is used only one other time in the Bible, Hebrews 4:12. The word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing as far as the division of soul and spirit, of both joints and marrow, and able to judge the thoughts, and here it is, intentions of the heart. Just as we have intentions in our heart, there's things we think about, we purpose. Peter says you need to arm yourself with that same purpose or intention or attitude. That's what Peter commands us to do. We need to arm ourselves with the attitude of Christ. That's what he's talking about. The attitude of a Christ, let's go back to the beginning of verse 1 now, who suffered in the flesh. And thus we have the text, therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with that same purpose. Make sure you never go out without a Christ-like attitude. The attitude that Christ had. The attitude that says, I'm going to live, as we would say, a godly life. I'm going to follow Christ, and I know suffering may come my way, and that's okay. It's not that I want to suffer, but if I suffer, I suffer. Because that's the kind of life that Jesus led, and followers of Christ should expect no less. That's what Peter's saying here. Therefore, since Christ also suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose. Our first point, prepare to suffer, because Christ suffered. And now we come to a second point. This will take a little bit of explanation. Ooh, I have another text, 1 Peter 2, verse 20 through 21, of Christ being an example. What credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience, but if when you do what is right and suffer for it patiently, and you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. For you've been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps. So we arm ourselves with the attitude of Christ. Because Christ suffered, we are expecting to suffer as we follow Christ. So point one, prepare to suffer, because Christ suffered. Second point, only other point we'll cover tonight, number two. Prepare to suffer because Christ changed you. We're going to have to work through a verse a little bit that might seem challenging here in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 1. Peter says, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Now, that's one of those verses that I come to when I'm first doing Bible reading, and I'll just tell you my attitude on that. Lord, I don't know what that means. I believe your word is true. I know it means something. I knew if I studied it out, I would figure it out by your grace. So maybe for now I'm doing my Bible reading, I'm just going to skip over it because I don't think it means what it just kind of like seems to mean. And I don't know if that's how that verse hits you, verse 1. Since Christ suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose. Why? Because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. We all know people who have suffered, and they're sinning all the time. How in the world can Peter say that if you suffer, you'll stop sinning? In fact, based on Scripture itself, we know that when we go through this life, we don't stop sinning, right? Proverbs 20, verse 9. Who can say, I have cleansed my heart, I'm pure from my sin? None of us can say that. How about Ecclesiastes 7, verse 20? Indeed, there's not a righteous man on earth who continually does good and who never sins. So what in the world is Peter talking about when he says here in the end of verse 1, he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin? Let's read the whole verse and see if we can make sense of this. Since Christ has suffered in the flesh, here's the imperative, the command, arm yourselves also with the same purpose. Why? Because he who suffered in the flesh, pause. He who suffered in the flesh is a reference to the purpose, to the person who has armed himself with the same purpose. See, he who has suffered in the flesh is the person who says, okay, Peter, I will obey. I'm going to have the same attitude that Christ had. I'm going to make a decision that I'm not going to live for sin anymore. See, my whole life I've been living for sin. I've been living for myself. And I would not want to do anything that would cause people to bring suffering my way. I don't want to be hurt by anyone. So I'm not going to stand up and say I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. I am not going to be bold about, yes, I believe the gospel, because people may persecute me. I don't want to live that way. And it's in light of that that Peter says, okay, and he's talking to Christians. He's saying, I'm commanding you. I want you to arm yourself with the purpose of, yes, I will follow Christ even if it means suffering, because I'm no longer living for sin. I'm living for Christ. I have ceased living for sin. And I think the context will bear that out. You say, where do you see that? Well, just keep reading into verse 2. Right after Peter says, he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, Peter says in verse 2, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. What Peter is saying here is, would you be willing to make a decision that no longer are you going to live for your lusts, but you're going to live for God's will? And even if that brings suffering into your life, that's okay, because you're not living for sin anymore, you're living for Christ. I could put it this way. Why should we prepare to suffer? Because Christ changed us. What does that mean? You no longer live for your own lusts. It used to be that's the kind of life that we lived. Verse 2. What does the average person do in this world? He lives to fulfill his lusts, right? I mean, what do you want? And some people say, I just want a beautiful home. So they work hard to get a beautiful home, right? That's what I want. That's what I live for. What does the next person do? Well, I just want to have great vehicles. So what does he do? That guy just lives for vehicles. And the next person, it might be for power. It might be for prestige. It might be for academic achievement. It might be for athletic or artistic achievement. That's what I want, and that's what I live for. And that's no surprise. That's how everyone lives. And Peter says, not you. Not anymore. Would you make a decision to arm yourself? Would you decide that you're going to start living for Christ and you're no longer going to live for, verse 2, the lusts of men? In fact, he's going to go on and explain it even more in verse 3. Drop down to verse 3, please. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles. As many of you know, Gentiles there in this context would not be referring to somebody who's not Jewish. It's referring to somebody who doesn't know Christ. So one translation has it, the desires and lusts of the pagans. What Peter's calling in verse 2, the lusts of men, he's calling in verse 3, the desire of the Gentiles. He's referring to things that people live for. Things that you used to live for before you became a Christian. In verse 3, they're called the desires, or the desire singular, of the Gentiles. Now, as a pastor, as a preacher, I could say, well, what would I think Peter's referring to? And I never like to do that because that's just my opinion. What I like is here Peter gives us a specific list in verse 3 of what he means by the desire of the Gentiles. Let's just hit them one at a time. It says, the desire of the Gentiles, verse 3, having pursued a course of sensuality. We live in a very sensual world, right? It's a word that refers to immorality, and not even everyday immorality. It means extreme immorality. The NIV says debauchery, KJV lasciviousness, NRSV licentiousness. Those are words I don't think we use a lot. But many people, what do? They live for their own lusts. That would include sensuality. That would include, Peter put secondly, he just lists the word lusts. That's a word that means desires. They could be good desires or bad desires. When they're bad desires, we all say that's wrong. But when they're good desires, they're frequently equally wrong, right? There are people that live for their spouses. There are parents that live for their children rather than living for Christ. You know, when somebody's lusting after illicit sex or excessive alcohol or illegal drugs, we say, wow, that's so wrong, that's a lust. And then we see people living for the good things, right, the American dream, and we say, that's okay. Well, that also would be a lust. Peter refers here to, first of all, what? Sensuality, and then lusts. And then number 3, he refers to, see it in verse 3, he refers to drunkenness. And there are people who just go through life intoxicated. That's no surprise, right? There was a discussion in the news this weekend. Greenville County either just passed or is considering passing a law that would say, it might have been the city or the county, I forget right now, but somebody considering passing a law, perhaps they've passed a law, that bars would close at 2 a.m. in the morning. And some people were saying, that's not fair, that's not right. And you might think, Greg, what do you think? Well, first of all, it doesn't matter what I think, okay? But the first thing I thought is, you know what? I don't really care if they close at 2 or not. I think it's sad that at 2 a.m. in the morning, there are people hanging out in bars. But I used to do that before I became a Christian, so who am I to slam them or put them down? When Christ was not in my life, that's where you would find me on the weekends. So I understand. See, that's how people live. Sensuality, lusts, drunkenness. Verse 3, the next word is carousing. And that's a word the ESV and the NIV translate as orgies. It's the idea of drunken parties. And Peter seems to have that on his mind because that's very close to the next word. The next phrase in verse 3 is drinking parties. So sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, what would you call that? I would call that the typical dormitory at a state university. That, at least when I was at Ohio State, it was that way. And that was over 30 years ago. Now, maybe they've had some kind of change for the better, but I doubt it. This is typical life. These are your neighbors. These are the people who work where you work. In fact, forget that. This is many of the people in this room before we came to know Christ. And then he adds at the very end, verse 3, abominable idolatries. And abominable, you say, what's going on there? Really, the word is lawless, not so much in the sense that you're doing things that are against man's law, but you're doing things that are against God's law, things that God would clearly say are sinful. Now, let's again try to keep big picture and see what Peter's saying here. What Peter's saying is in verse 1, Christ has suffered in the flesh, so here's what you need to do. You need to prepare. You need to arm yourself. You need to get ready for battle because you are going to suffer if you've made a decision that I'm living for Christ. Verse 2. I'm not living for my lusts anymore. Verse 3. I'm living for, the end of verse 2, the will of God. And that's our final point here. Prepare to suffer because Christ changed you. What does that mean? A, you no longer live for your own lust. B, you now live for God's will. And if you're serious about living for Jesus Christ, you will suffer. I promise you that. Now, I have to admit, it may not be like people suffered back then. Back in the day when Peter's writing, there are people who lost their lives because they were Christians. That is happening in our world, but that's not happening in our country. So, how does that apply to us? Well, in conclusion, let me say this. The message tonight is prepare to suffer because Christ suffered. Prepare to suffer because Christ changed you. I think there's a message. I know there's a message for those who are followers of Christ. Have you obeyed the imperative, the command of verse 1? Have you armed yourself with the attitude of Christ? Peter's talking to Christians. This is not get saved. Peter is commanding us to make a decision. Have we made a decision that I'm going to follow Christ? I'm not living for my own dreams anymore. I'm going to follow Christ. I put it this way. Have you committed to no longer live for your own lusts, but to follow Christ? Even though you may suffer, and you say, well Greg, how would I be suffering? How about relationally? How about all of the young people in junior high, in high school? When all of the other kids are saying, why won't you drink this? Why won't you smoke this? Why won't you look at my iPhone and check her out? And you say no. And they laugh at you and they mock you. And they say, oh, you're one of those born-again people, right? And they laugh at you. Is that not for a junior higher or a high schooler suffering relationally? And that young man, that young woman would say, you know what, I'm going to live for Christ. People are laughing at me. People are mocking at me. Maybe I'm going home and crying at night, but that's okay. Because, see, Jesus Christ suffered, and I'm a follower of Christ. And if I suffer, that's okay. How about a young lady who very much would like to be married, and she meets a guy who is an awesome guy to most people, a guy who is kind to her and respects her and treats her well. Oh, he's not a Christian. And he is very interested in her, and she has to make a decision. If I let him go, I might never get married. Boy, that would be hard. Or will she say, but you know what? I am a follower of Christ. And even though I would like to get married, and letting this guy go means I may never get married, that's okay with me. Because if that's what Christ has for me, I'm good. Maybe those would be some illustrations. That when a person commits to following Christ, they may suffer relationally. How about vocationally? How about somebody who at work says, I will live for Jesus Christ, and because of that, you don't get the promotion. And the boss asks you to do something that's unethical. And you say to him, sir, I'm sorry. You don't throw it in his face. I can't do that. In fact, I won't do that. Why? Because I'm a Christian. And that would dishonor my God. And making that kind of a decision. You say, Greg, if you do that in today's world, you'll never climb the corporate ladder. Maybe that's what Peter's talking about. That you'll never be vocationally successful, at least as much as other people, because you've decided to live for Christ. How about financially? How about being offered an awesome job that will pay you more than twice the money you're making now? Oh, you'll never see your family. You'll never be involved in your church. It involves certain things that will take you away from what really matters, but who cares? You'll finally get the money you want, and you look at that and you say, no. I'm going to spend time with my family so I can influence them for Christ. I'm going to be part of a church family so I can encourage others to live for Christ. And if I have to keep my same modest paying job, I'm good with that. How about socially? When people ask you what you think about anything, from abortion to homosexuality, from the transgender movement, and they make fun of you, and they laugh at you. You know, when the guys at work say, hey, we're all going out to a club tonight, why don't you come? And you say, no. And they, oh yeah, he's one of those Christians, I forgot. Have you ever come to the place where you said, I just want to follow Christ? I've made that decision. That's the attitude I want to have. How about legally? I'm not original on this. Many people have said, and I agree with them, this is what will bring persecution to the church in this century. It will be on the topic of homosexuality and the transgender movement. And as soon as there are church members who openly identify as homosexual, as transgender, and then the church says you can't be a deacon, you can't be an elder, you can't be a member, that's going to end up in court, and this is where the church is going to get hit legally. Many people have said that this will be the persecution that comes to the church in the United States. I believe that. And who knows, maybe one day physically. But here's the application of the message for us tonight. Have you ever committed to arm yourself with the same attitude that Christ had? I want to please my Father, and I don't want to be persecuted. I don't want to suffer, but if I do, I do. Because I have made a choice, and if everybody laughs at me, mocks me, and hurts me, I don't like it, but it's okay. Like we sang this morning, all I have is Christ, and Jesus is my life. And apart from Christ, I don't need anything else. That's the heartbeat that Peter is trying to communicate to his readers. I was trying to think of a way to close with an illustration of this, and I hope this is an appropriate illustration of a man that I hope is my brother. I don't know a lot about him. You know who that is, right? Who is that? That's the Vice President of the United States. So here's a picture of Mike Pence. And I have read more than once that he describes himself, number one, as a Christian, number two, as a conservative, and number three, as a Republican. And because of that, he wasn't sure how far he could go in the Republican Party. This is not any kind of pro-Republican statement. I am saying here's a man who at least says, number one, I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Christ. And I have met people who say, I know the church that he goes to, and with him it's real. I'll simply tell you, I hope so. I don't know him. Here is a man that has been put in what? In the sight, if you will, of the LGBT community, lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgender. And they oppose him strongly. And I've been waiting for something to happen where the LGBT community says, finally, we're going to bring Pence down. And I think it's just begun. And it's been all over the news this weekend with the Olympics. Because Vice President Pence has been elected to represent the United States in some official way, leading the Olympic athletes. You say, who cares? Well, there are people that don't like Mike Pence. There are United States athletes that don't like him. And your thought is, who cares? There's a lot of people you don't like, and there's a lot of people I don't like. So if there's a couple of athletes who don't like our vice president, who cares? And nobody cares. Unless the person who doesn't like him happens to be a homosexual. And because the first openly homosexual athlete in the Winter Olympics doesn't like Mike Pence, because Mike Pence doesn't agree with homosexuality, it's front page news. And I think to myself, this is incredible. I mean, who cares what a figure skater thinks? Who cares what any other athlete thinks? You could think anything you want, but if you think, I don't like him because he doesn't like me because I'm a homosexual, that will be on the front page of all of the news outlets. And it's there. And I'm making a prediction, and I hope I'm wrong. This is going to be one of the lead stories in the upcoming Olympics. How can we have a vice president that would dare to believe it is wrong to live a homosexual life? How can we do that? Shouldn't he be more open-minded? Which is an incredible thought. Because he's not allowed to think what he thinks, and people will oppose his Christian views, and they will accuse him of being narrow-minded, and those who say you have to be open-minded are actually more narrow-minded. Because if we truly lived in an open-minded society, what would we say? We would say, here's an athlete who's homosexual, okay, and here's a vice president who doesn't agree with that. It's not newsworthy. But that's not the kind of world we live in. And he is going to face persecution. If assuming he's my brother in Christ, I hope he is, I would want to say to my brother in Christ, Brother Mike, arm yourself. Get a hold of 1 Peter chapter 4 and arm yourself with this same purpose. Are you willing to stand for Christ? And if you do, I think it's going to cost you your political future. But are you willing to do that? Are you willing to say, I'm going to stand for Christ, and regardless of what happens to me or my family, it's okay, because I've made that decision. Because I'm not living for sin anymore. I'm not living, verse 2, for the lusts of men. I'm not living, verse 3, for the desires of the Gentiles, but I'm living for Christ. And if persecution comes, that's okay, because I've armed myself with that realization. Let's set aside the vice president. That was just an illustration. I'm back to us. I usually don't close with this kind of a pointed invitation, especially on a Sunday night, but that's my question for all of us tonight. Have you committed to live for Christ? Have you embraced the mind of Christ? And you might say, Greg, I think I've done that in the past. How many times do you have to do that? I don't know. Some might say you have to do it once. That's great. Maybe some say, you know, do it once a month. That's great. Some might say you have to do it every day. Some might say throughout the day. But we'll just talk about this moment in time. Are you committed to following Christ? If it means losing your job, washing out of an academic program, if it means a financial hurt, if it means being made fun of, if it means being ostracized to somebody odd, or if it means people calling you and your family names that are not very nice, are you committed to live for Christ? And when the suffering comes, you say, well, Christ suffered. So I guess I need to have that attitude that on the path to glory, there's suffering. Would this be a message that by God's grace, you realize you need to prayerfully consider? I was talking to a gentleman about just how we do church, how we worship, how we close messages, and I was talking to a couple of the guys, actually, and said, you know, how have you seen it done in other places? And one of the gentlemen said, you know, Greg, I've been in a church where sometimes they'll just have a little bit of time at the end of a service for silent prayer so that if the Holy Spirit is working in somebody's heart through the Word, that they would have an opportunity to reflect on that. And that's how I want to end tonight from 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 1. Christ has suffered in the flesh. Peter's command is you get ready with that same attitude. Get ready to suffer because you're not living for your lusts anymore. You're living for Christ. In some churches, I realize this would be like come forward time or raise a hand, and, you know, I don't do that. But I would like us to just bow our heads, and we're going to set aside maybe a minute or two, a little bit longer period than we have in the past, and you'd be free just to read through 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 1, and maybe verse 2, and then pray that God would work in your life in a way that would bring him glory. Let's bow our heads and we'll just have a short, brief time silently, personally, to pray.